Mara, so nice to see you.
You too. You too. It feels like it's been a long time.
I know. I was trying to remember when that was, but it seems like it was in the dead of winter, maybe. I don't know.
It was. I remember snow.
Maybe we just want to start out with asking you how you came to know Michael Ascher.
I first met Michael Ascher through John Knight. We were neighbors. And I really enjoyed him. He was a smart, interesting guy who at the time I was a clothing designer, and I was contemplating going back to school to be an artist. And Michael taught at Cal Arts, and I really appreciated his brain and the way he thought about things. And between he and John Knight, I decided to enroll at Cal Arts, and then I studied with him for my undergraduate and graduate degrees, and then after I graduated, I became his studio assistant, and then I was also teaching at UC Irvine at the same time. That's how I got to become involved with this project. He knew that my pedagogy was pretty solid because of how we talked about teaching.
And I think you were the second moderator. There was a different moderator the first reinstallation. So how did he approach you about the project?
Well, I knew that he was, from concept, I knew about this project. And he and I talked about it in the early days of him putting it together for Made in LA was the original presentation of it, I believe. And I'm trying to remember how it happened that there was the first person, I hadn't expected to be a facilitator on the project. And he became involved with the first woman who's an educator. I don't remember her name, but I remember that he asked her to help, or the museum found her. I don't remember the particulars of that. And then when it was time to do the second iteration, he talked to me about doing it because of the contemporary wing and Stephanie Barron's involvement, because he knew that I understood the work pretty well in that wing. So, and he knew that I worked both as a college professor and I worked for years at the California State Summer School for the Arts as a weekend sculpture teacher. So he knew that I had experience with both older students and younger students, and that he knew that I understood his thinking pretty well. So that's how I was brought in.
The original show was, right, Made in California, Art, Image, and Identity, 1900 to 2000, right? And then within that was this LACMA Lab education initiative that was, I think, 11 commissions for artists to make environments for kids.
Correct. And Michael's was, as a typical Michael Ascher's project was a plaque on the wall with the outline of this idea of working with students to reinstall something that's already been established.
Right. And then just the documentation, the sort of straightforward documentation of the result.
If memory serves, which is debatable, I think it was just the proposal that the reinstallations hadn't happened yet. So they were in the future. It was the proposal that was his project for Made in California. And then I was looking through my notes, and Made in California was, do you have the date for that? When Made in California happened?
It says September 2000 to 2001.
Right. And I believe the first iteration of this happened toward the end of that period of time. And then the one I was involved in was 2002, middle of 2002, beginning to middle.
Right. And I looked up Made in California, and because it was a lot of LACMA, I think the different galleries had slightly different dates in relation to the kind of like schedule of the museum overall. So it was kind of like a long span in 2000 and 2001. And I guess it wasn't obvious that Michael Ascher would get to do this again, right? That came out in the course of the first reinstallation, this opportunity to do a second round.
Correct. That's correct. I don't remember why it came out. Maybe it was just that it was a... Well, I knew the original proposal was to have, I think he originally wanted to have groups of students work on different galleries throughout the museum. And it would be the same people. But that was not feasible given students, you know, given that students like don't always take the same class or aren't always involved in the same thing. So then his thinking evolved about it. And it became this one installation I don't remember what area of the older painting. I knew it was a European painting galleries. That was the first one. Ideally, it would have been the same exact group that then would have moved over to the Stephanie Barron wing, what she oversaw, but it was a completely different group of students. So I think he realized it wasn't feasible to have his first more kind of idealistic notion of having the same students like 2 years in 2 years in sequence. But that didn't work out that way. I think it's a great idea though, but it's just not something that works with high school students.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about your role as a facilitator and what you did with the students, how you helped them and negotiated with the museum staff.
I've been trying to recall the conversations that Michael and I had about my role, but here's what it ended up being. So the first meeting we had, Michael was there with Bob Sain and Kelly Sakat. I remember that. And Michael talked a bit about himself and talked about what his ideas were for the project. And then I was introduced as the person that would help guide them through each phase of this reinstallation. And what it ended up being is that I felt it important that I give them a bit of context for the work that they were considering, the gallery, because it's such an important period of time. So it became a little bit of an art history investigation because they didn't have the understanding of what kind of work they were dealing with. They didn't know the Magritte painting that's so famous. They didn't know, you know, there are so many different important pieces in that gallery. So I wanted to impress upon them that what they were dealing with was something that was pretty revolutionary at the time that they were made, because to them, they're just old paintings. You know, they didn't have a lot of in-depth meaning. You know, since they don't have a lot of art history in high school anymore, that was lost on them. So I realized that we had to kind of back up. And the first few sessions we talked about, you know, what it meant to be an artist during that time, what it meant culturally and socially and all that stuff, right? So it was a little bit of an art history and art history lesson along with how art is influenced by the time it's made in and all the stuff that we know. But they don't, because they're young and they don't really know. You know, they didn't have the experience yet. So that was kind of the first part. And then I saw myself as a little bit of a leader and somebody who encouraged innovation to the best possible realm. Because I know we talked about this before. One of the things about the misconception about high school students is that they're radical thinkers and that they, you know, automatically think about the most, you know, outrageous thing. And it's really actually the opposite because of, not everybody, of course, I'm generalizing terribly, but there's limits of experience and limits of culture and limits of, you know, there's a lot of limitations placed on young people because they don't have the experience. It's not they don't have a wide open book that we think they are. It's actually more limited. So my role became to help them think about what it is that they're seeing, meaning how, you know, traditional ways of presenting artwork, what they're seeing doesn't have to necessarily be only that way. So we had a lot of discussions about that. It was, I felt that that was my main purpose. And Michael and I talked after every time I met with them. I think I met them every week. I think it was either once or twice a week for a couple of months. A student meeting I had, I would call Michael and we would talk about the problems that I was running into. The largest one being exactly what I was just describing is the resistance, in a way, of thinking of different ways of looking at things in this context. But once they started thinking about it, so we started, I had them start making lists and think about what's a different way, what are different ways of presenting artwork? Why do they have to be inside? Why aren't they at a zoo or, whatever. I don't remember how my brain worked at the time, but, and that's what started them thinking about presenting things the way that they did, which was contextually an exterior space during, with music and an atmosphere that was within the framework of the time that the pieces were made. So, then I also was a bit of a go-between, although not as much as, say, even Michael was, or Bob Sain, Kelly Sakat. They were really the go-between between me and the museum. Even though we had interactions with them, I didn't have the same kind of clout, honestly, as people who were working there had. Because we were asking for, like, that Magritte painting to be held, not, attached to the wall with, earthquake prevention cleats, but hanging in like sitting inside a stanchion or inside a kind of a, almost like a billboard, so that you could see the front and the back. So there were initially a bit of resistance because of insurance issues, of course, a bit of resistance to presenting the work that the way the students wanted to present it, like hanging in the corner or hanging in the middle of the space or. But we had a meeting with the preparator team, which were fantastic. They were just absolutely fantastic. And Stephanie Barron was there and Michael was there. And we all talked about ways that they could ensure that the work was protected, but it could also preserve the integrity of the students' ideas. So I was kind of I pushed these things through from week to week and then just made sure that the students were on board. So they understood what was happening. Because a lot of times that we'd be in these meetings, and I knew that they had no idea what an extraordinary experience they were happening, that what was happening with them. I mean, it was like, so I would, before we went in, I would just say, hey, you guys, like, it's really amazing that Stephanie Barron is going to be there. And I've shown in museums. I haven't had this kind of opportunity. I was trying to get them to see how extraordinary it really was that they were given this opportunity. And if any of them, I don't remember if any of them were interested in art. One of them, I think, was interested in being a photographer, but more like commercially. So I don't know. Maybe this affected them in a way that was life-changing. Who knows? But I saw that as sort of my role. But it was both pedagogical and practical. But I wasn't really teaching them anything other than that initial art history lesson. And then we talked different ways about doing stuff. So,
well, it seemed like there were systems in place also to kind of ensure their autonomy that Michael Asher put forward with you to sort of give them autonomy to make decisions, but within the strictures of the safety of the work and the safety of the visitor being kind of in play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was Michael's main focus, really, was that the students have the ability to come up with their ideas and have that be realized, and that it wasn't under any kind of dictate by anybody else. So, and that, of course, that was important to me too. But as I said, it needed some guidance. their autonomy was intact. I mean, we respected all their ideas. We had a very democratic process about how we would vote on things with the students. Like if ideas were made, if ideas came up and we thought it was a solid idea as a group, then we would vote, we would talk about that. So that kind of process was built into the Michael's idea. So I respected that and kept that going.
Did you ever feel any resistance on the part of the museum staff because this was subverting a certain hierarchy or understanding of role, but I'm just wondering how they dealt with this kind of reversal.
That is something I would remember, you know, if that happened, and I don't remember it at all. So I think that they were, other than, I mean, it was just normal discussions about, well, I don't, like with the preparator crew or with the, you know, the registrar, it wasn't necessarily resistance. It was just, they were kind of concerned about how they could facilitate. The other aspect was it was expensive to do these things. You know, that we didn't have a giant budget, you know, but so if I remember correctly, there had to be some more money raised in order to facilitate the actual building of these props and things for the paintings. I don't remember there being any kind of problem from the museum end of not wanting to participate fully. I think that they were on board with Michael. You know, he was so well respected that I believe everybody was pretty much on board with the project that way.
So the students did have to go through a pretty formal process of approval for their plan. Did you go through multiple iterations of ideas with them and then also all the departments?
I tried to present a final plan as complete as possible before, you know, instead of going through different sort of small, you know, kind of initial ideas, we really didn't have that much time to come up with something. You know, it was only like two or three months, something like that. So knowing that there would be a secondary process of getting things approved and decided on and how they would be made and getting them made, I wanted to present a pretty intact idea to the meeting that we had with everybody, that the students did. I helped them with the presentation, but they were the presenters. There was this one kid, I can't remember his name. He was funny and he was articulate and he was basically the spokesperson. So when he presented the idea, it was a pretty much intact idea. And the only thing that was a concern was how it would fit within the budget, the timeline, and the budget and the timeline, really, for what we were trying to do. And I was really impressed how they accommodated everything. They, meaning the museum staff. I remember that meeting because I was sitting right here. I was sitting to the right of the student. Michael was next to me, then there was a student, and he did such a good job. He charmed everybody so much, and that it just worked. It worked out really well. Because I've had experience with a lot different, I did a lot of installations early in my art making, and I know how difficult it can be if you're not really clear the first time out. So I wanted to ensure that we could be as clear as possible.
Can you describe the show? Just sort of like a mental walkthrough of the show itself, like what they did and what the experience of it was.
So the show was, I mean, fortunately I have some, you know, little crappy images of the installation, which helped me remember. I'm really impressed that we were able to accomplish what we did because it was quite ambitious. And the show conceptually was in answer to the questions that I was asking them that I talked about earlier, that like what situations could we present artwork that is of this caliber, right, that would be a unique experience for a viewer. I'm phrasing it in through my way. I think I said it probably differently to them. And what they came up with was, and as I said earlier, so we came up with a kind of, we meaning the group, came up with a kind of set of questions about social, political, cultural, aesthetic framework of the time. And they as a group decided, okay, so what if we put the work outside? You know, what if we bring the outside in and have it be the walls were covered with mirrored. They wanted mirror mirrors. That was one of the compromises we did. It was mirrored plexiglass from floor to ceiling, and on the mirror was a silhouetted cityscape of New York during that period. So not all it was. We had gotten an image up online and made a mirror, basically made a kind of beautiful silhouetted cityscape that was repeated throughout the whole space. And they liked the idea of a mirror reflecting itself and then also all the work inside. So there was a kind of, for them, it was a interesting comment about the artwork looking at its own history and its own time. There was jazz, there was music from, I think, the 20s through the 50s, mostly jazz. We had a mixtape that was going throughout the whole exhibition. The art was hung on the walls, and also in the middle of the space, there was the pipe painting by Magritte on its own stanchion that was made out of galvanized pipe. So it had a very industrial feel, and protected by plexiglass on both sides. And because they were dealing with these questions about culture and like what's the life of this painting, they showed the provenance on the back of all, you know, all the stickers of all the places that this painting had traveled. They had no idea that that's what happens on the back of a famous painting, you know, that it actually has its own history built in. So they were pretty excited by that idea. So that was there. There was another display of three paintings. I can't remember which ones they were, that was kind of a triptych, like a triangle shape. And they wanted this idea of like the painting's influence on each other. There was a bus bench that we got that's old, this really old, cool bus bench. It was just shocking to me that we got this from the metro department. They donated it. Beautiful old wooden bus bench, which is where they put their thank yous, their list of people that they thanked. And then they also put the didactic information on it. So the slats of the bus bench had vinyl lettering. That's really cool. These were all things that they finally came up with. I remember there was a painting. I don't remember which painting it was, but they hung it in the corner as a way to kind of disturb the just kind of basic for a wall idea. So there was some pretty nice invention happening with things, you know, the way things were being looked at and reflected upon. And it turned out just great. And there was also, if I remember right, the preparator team painted the ceiling either blue or black because it was dark. They wanted it to be night, to look like night, not just any street scene at any time of day. They wanted it to be dark and moody. So that the paintings really, the artwork, there were sculptures too, really, were really present. You know, it just, because there was so much happening in there that they felt it was important to highlight the artworks of art. But it was such an installation. You know, they made an installation piece instead of just a presentation. And it was pretty successful. I was really proud of them. I was like, way to think differently, guys. It was good. Michael was really pleased. Michael was very, very excited.
And wasn't there even a kind of street lamp in there?
Oh, there was. Yes. Yes, there was. Bought it at Home Depot. Home Depot had this kind of nostalgic looking street light. Exactly. Thank you for reminding me of that. That's right. So we had that, and that was operational. That was part of the lighting system. It really worked. I mean, it really, really worked. You know, it's like, what's so funny about some of this, I'm just telling you guys, is that mirrors are so cliched, you know? So when they first are like, oh, we want to do mirrors. I'm like, no, not mirrors, please, not mirrors. I didn't say that out loud. But so my way of making sure they really wanted that was to say, okay, so what are the reflected, why, what, you know, let's talk about reflection, blah, blah, blah. And it circled back to mirrors with a painting on it, and it worked so well. So, you know, yay perseverance of the students, you know, because I was trying to like, okay, let's gently guide you away from the cliche. But, you know, they really were right. They were 100% right. I was 100% wrong. So
I was reading some of the press around, which I think you may have provided me with, but there was one of the students is quoted. They asked her about the mirrors, and she said, "The mirrors expand the dimensions of the art, and this gallery is the beginning of the expansion," which I thought was, it sounds corny at first, but then it's very poetic.
Yeah. And it actually had that effect. You know, there was psychologically a really beautiful effect that was happening. So I just was like, okay, just shut up, Mara. And just, you know, push them a little bit, but they're on their, you know, they really did, once they got the idea that they could do anything, you know, they were on board. So that was, and I know that quote is so beautiful. I read that too. I was like, oh, right. There were some very interesting students in that group. I was very honored to work with them. It was pretty exciting.
And you said Astra was really pleased with the show, with the kind of output.
Yeah, this was exactly what he was hoping would happen. You know, I mean, he basically said that to me in so many words, is that in his dreams, this is what would happen, is that it wouldn't just be, you know, paintings hanging on a wall, but it would be a consideration of all of these things that were presented in ways that would be provocative for people. You know, I was, before we got on the phone, I was reading their statement. Have you guys read this? The statement that was on the bus bench?
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Oh my God. It's like this, I started laughing out loud. So the part that just is so amazing to me, I mean, I'm just going to skip to this, is that we hope that our efforts please you and that the unorthodox presentation of the art and utilization of three-dimensional space in no way frightens you. I was like, that. How wonderful is that? It's like, I love it. It's such a great statement.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the didactics and how that process came about. Was that like a collaborative effort between all the students writing that?
It was. Yeah, it was. I think if I remember correctly, again, one or two of the students that felt more comfortable with writing, they were throwing out ideas and like discussions, and that, you know, there were notes taken, and the one or two students wrote this, and then I probably helped edit, and then somebody, you know, maybe Bob Sane, I can't remember exactly, maybe the, you know, the press people. I can't exactly remember how this evolved into quite an erudite statement. You know, it's really wonderful. But I know that there were one or two students who were really pivotal. They were the main people who were writing this. It may have gone through some, you know, museum. I don't remember the name of who it was who was doing the press and that kind of stuff. It was important to Michael that the students do all this stuff. So they did.
To what degree were the students aware that the frame of the whole thing was an artwork by Michael Asher? That sense of like their role versus this kind of meta frame of the thing being the enactment of an artist, you know, around their work.
I think it was very confusing to them. I don't think they really understood what was, I mean, that's hard for a lot of people to wrap their brain around, right? Especially then. You know, at the end, they were so proud of what they had done, and they got such good feedback for it that I think that it wasn't even that they saw themselves as the art maker of this, the person who did it. And then the larger picture of Michael's umbrella just was like, why is this old guy here? You know, like, oh, there's that guy who shows up once in a while, right? And that, I don't think they realized to the extent of Michael's role, you know, that they wouldn't be there if it weren't Michael. You know, it's just somehow it happened. It's like this magic thing. So I hope that answered your question. I mean, I could see that they were so excited about the attention that they got. And that trumped everything.
But I guess then he would have had to be kind of modest or restrained enough in his own claiming authorship, like, to allow all that. Like, you could just imagine there must have been a sort of complex, delicate politic of how he would present in relation to their having this kind of wonderful experience and feeling very empowered and centered in it, that he had to kind of tread lightly, maybe a little bit, I could just imagine.
I think he really did. And he was very careful to make sure that, I know that there was an LA Times article about this, and there was an interview by him. I don't remember reading it, or I don't remember exactly what it said when I read it, but he was very respectful of their role, you know. And it was, even though it was clear in all of this written information that it was his project, he really presented it as their project, because it really was, you know, ultimately it was. I mean, it's, you know, the kind of confusion of the layers of conceptual work that, you know, it's Michael's project, but it's also their project. So, and that works for, I know that worked for him in terms of the egalitarian idea of, you know, how a laborer is just as important as the person who thought of the object, you know, that has always been such an important thing for him. Yeah, it was tricky, because tricky only in the respect that he was there for them, but he wasn't there, you know, really, not really. I mean, I don't even think they fully understood what was happening. And why would they? I mean, really. Yeah, that was 14 years ago? 20 years ago? How long? It was like maybe 20 years ago. And that wasn't a common discussion with art making, you know, especially for younger people. It wasn't something, we're so used to it now being just a part of the normal art conversation, you know, the framework of conceptual work. It's even become a vernacular. But 22 years ago, it still wasn't, even though it had been around for a long time. People were still confounded by the idea that, you know, how Michael worked was still confounding to people.
Yeah, and I think you touched on this a little bit, but just in terms of the system he made, that he built a system that kept him at bay from having influence on them. Like, he set up the paradigm, but then you really were that role that kept him in a way apart from them.
Right, and the only times he saw them were the first meeting. If there were any large group meetings with the staff of the museum in any way. So there was a budget meeting, and it may have been the same time as the preparator. We met with the preparators. There was, so those types of meetings, he did show up. His responsibility for the overall health of the project was intact. He spoke very little in those meetings. You know, he wanted the students to take the role of the leader. You know, it was their project, so he wanted to give them the opportunity to be the leader. I remember that there was one point that Stephanie Barron asked him some questions that he answered that I think helped move budget questions along. But for the most part, whenever he showed up, the only time he spoke the most was at the opening. There was a gathering before where Michael was at the podium. Stephanie introduced Michael. Michael talked. And that was the most I think they'd ever heard him talk. So I think they were like, this guy's here again. But, you know, he very much set up how it was their, it really was their project, which is why I think they felt that way, and rightfully so, because they did it.
It's interesting, even in this sort of debrief of the project, Michael's just giving them, I don't know if you remember this questionnaire he gave everyone.
I don't.
He gave out this survey at the end of the project so the students could rate their experience, a very sort of like standard evaluation type document. Even that shows some sort of distance or kind of non-involvement in the sort of authorship or experience of the project.
What? I don't remember that. What was the upshot of that? Did students answer? Did they answer the questions?
It's literally like a questionnaire with questions.
Oh, that's hilarious.
How did you interact with and relate to others during the project? You can choose like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1 is not well, and 5 is very well. This sort of like extremely bureaucratic, something they would basically fill out in a classroom.
Like a student evaluation?
Yeah.
Hilarious.
They're really funny.
Michael was so funny. He did things like that. I just know that is his sense of humor right there. This kind of dry, really like pedantic set of questions. That's funny.
Yeah, the one that I have in front of me, they used to want to be a scientist and now they want to be an art professor.
And there you have it. I think that's so cool.
Two things that this project brings up, questioning and exceeding and sort of undermining roles within a museum structure. And I guess the two obvious real roles is like education and the sort of limits of what an education department does. And of course, this was the inauguration of LACMA Lab, which was trying to be a more innovative education framework. And then the role of curator, the professional role of a curator gets very challenged in this, and the role of a sort of audience member, and there's a lot of undermining of roles, and I guess that was evident and discussed, right? And to some degree with Asher, and I don't know with the students, maybe they, like you're describing, maybe they just kind of were given the frame and they could move within it and they didn't have to realize that they were so much undermining and kind of transfiguring these roles. The project really does do those things with both education and curatorial.
It does. Yeah, it does. Of course it does. And I don't think that we really, I think I mentioned this earlier, I don't think they would fully comprehend that, you know, that like what that actually signified literally, you know, in terms of the language of hierarchy in that situation. There's no way. Maybe they might have had a kind of "Are you sure?" idea of like, oh, this is so crazy that we get to do this, but that there wasn't a way to really fully comprehend it. You know, maybe later, you know, maybe 10 years down the road, you know, now that they're, or 20 years down the road, maybe they look back and go, "Wow, how did that happen?" You know, but at the time, high school students, you know, I'm going to make a blanket statement again. High school students are so used to structure. You know, they live in structure. They've been living in structure their whole life until, you know, the only time you live, well, we all live in structure the whole time. But, you know, if you're given an opportunity like this, you're still in a structure, right? So they're seeing it that way. Michael is looking at it differently. But he's, to me, that questionnaire acknowledges that it's still a structure. You know, there's still something that's being worked within. I think a lot of Michael's projects does do this, where it's in the evaluation later of the project that you start seeing the layers of complexity. You know, because in the moment, we were just trying to get the thing done. You know, it's just like anything, right? It's like, how do we get this done? How can I get these students to do the work? You know, that was my, let's get them to do the work. And then let's get it done. And then it took a life of its own after that, because it lived on longer than it was supposed to. And by, I don't remember how long, a year or something, it came down quite a bit longer. It was up quite a bit longer than stuff it originally had been slated for. So it took a life of its own. And now we can look back on it, you know, and look at how complicated it really is, complex it is, with the relationship to the institution, to, you know, what's the role of the artist. But in the middle of it, there's no time. You know, you just do it, right? So, and I think that was actually really helpful, because if the students fully comprehended the weight of on their shoulders of this, I don't know that they would have given themselves permission to be so inventive.
Yeah, and then the one thing you just touched on that seems really important is kind of the reflective space of the project, because I think we'd say that in our work in the Michael Asher archive of later works in the 2000s, even 90s and 2000s, this project seems incredibly important to him. And in interviews and in notes, maybe the project that engages him the most thoroughly in retrospect, where there's a lot of going back to it and talking about it and writing about it and reflecting on it and feeling like he did push to something that took steps much further than other projects where his hand wasn't involved, his aesthetic decisions weren't involved. Like it got very far out away from him. But it does seem like that it was like reflected upon as a really successful project, or a project that like provoked him in his practice in a really meaningful way. So I don't know if that was something that was discussed between you and him after the fact, but we were struck by that, just how generative and kind of dazzled he was by what happened.
That's wonderful. I didn't know that. I think that's absolutely wonderful.
In his reflections, he says that he thinks the project is a structure that can animate social change. And I thought that was like, it's so optimistic about changes in education.
Well, you know, he was so interesting. I mean, I was involved in his post-studio class practically all 5 years at CalArts, almost every semester. And it was, I'm pretty sure he saw that class as an artwork. He saw the structure of that class as one of his pieces, you know, one of his projects that went on for how many years. And it was, he had that kind of method where he would sit back and let things happen and only intervene if he felt that we'd gotten so far off track that it was no longer productive. But we could go anywhere. I mean, we went anywhere. And I can tell you, as a student, it was profound for me because it taught me how to see, you know, how to really see, how to really look, like percept, deeply perceive something that I was looking at, because I was experiencing, everybody who was participating, we saw it as a collaborative project to, you know, work with this person. I mean, I'm sure you know about Post Studio. We talk about one or two pieces, maybe one piece from 10 o'clock in the morning till sometimes 2 in the morning. And it was, you know, it was profound, you know, to have that experience. So I think that that's one of the reasons why he knew that I would be able to understand on a much more, you know, kind of condensed way, the project at LACMA, because it's his, you know, like practical version of that, like how, you know, how can you get that going because Post Studio was impractical, you know, in the best way possible. And, but it affected many, many people, you know, so he extended that out. I saw him extend that out into this project for LACMA Lab. And it was really neat for me to be a part of it, because that's what I understood about Michael's pedagogy so well. Not that I could do it as well as he did, but I could, you know, try. Because his gentle leading was so, so effective, you know, sometimes infuriating, honestly. Because there'd be people off on a tangent, and I'd be like, can we move on, please? You know, but that tangent would often kind of open something else up. So, you know, I learned a lot about that, too. So I'm very moved that this LACMA project was something that he felt was an extension of that, right? Because that's what I hear. He saw it in practical use. And he was such an idealist, really. He really was. Like, to imagine this project, you have to be an idealist. To think, I'm going to go to this, you know, major institution and let them take, you know, throw a bunch of high school students in there, and they're going to, you know, handle these really expensive paintings. Let's see.
Yeah, I feel like his idealism matches the optimism of the display, and somehow the student's display is strangely optimistic.
Oh, it's so interesting. Yeah. I haven't thought about it that way, but I can see your point. Because I think they weren't necessarily, they weren't a group of students that had a lot of optimism for the future. So I think at the same time, I understand what you're saying, Stella, that there's this sense of possibility in how things are presented that makes it optimistic. That totally makes sense.
I was going to ask you sort of how you saw this project as part of his practice or as a work, as you understand his art. But then to hear you talk about the kind of deep interiority of being a participant in the post studio program and then sort of seeing that the interior of his pedagogical work and ethic around education gave you a different view than someone that would just perceive his artworks or how he engages with institutions or the ways that maybe people talk about his work only from the exterior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious, have you talked to any of his teaching assistants?
Not yet, no. I mean, I think we're working our way toward that, but yeah, not yet.
That is a very special relationship that he had with people. There's a good friend of mine was one of them, and I would encourage you to talk to her because she's profoundly articulate. Because that's where it becomes very clear about how Post Studio was a project of his and how important it was in terms of his thinking. I know that there was that book published of all of his TAs, you know, from, I don't remember the...
Yeah, everyone enrolled in Post Studio every year, basically, right?
Oh, is that what it was? Okay. Wow, okay.
It's like the official enrollment sheet for each year's class.
So in terms of that roster, that didn't mean that that was all the people who participated, right? There were plenty of people who didn't enroll in that class.
That's a caveat in the intro to that book. Leslie Dick and Adriana Pedrosa put that together, and they say right at the outset, this is the official roster, but that they acknowledge that there were people, just like you describe, quite a few people that would not be captured by this at all.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting, because then it means there's a whole other group that willingly participated for no, you know, outward goal, right? It was certainly much more about the experience, not about, I'm going to get the credit. You know, so, and there were a number of us. I don't know that I enrolled every quarter.
Did this LACMA project affect you or affect your work?
Ah, good question. That's a really good question. You know, life affects my work. I don't know. It just does. You know, as things change. I think it affected my teaching because I taught for so many years as a way to support myself as an artist. It helped my clarity in teaching, like sense of purpose. I don't think it affected my artwork, though. Michael and I, my work is can be either conceptually or materially based. And we had one of those relationships that was playfully antagonistic. So I think he respected my work, but it was nowhere near. It was not in the same realm. So it's like I understand it really well, but it's like it's not something that I would. This is me. You're experiencing my brain right now is what's happening because I'm trying to figure it out. So I don't think so. The answer is I don't think so. Sorry, that was the most long winding road to get to that answer.
You don't happen to be in touch with any of the students?
No.
I thought it was a long shot, but it would be cool to talk to one of them.
It would be amazing. You have their names, yeah?
I mean, across all this material, I'm finding names. I don't know if I have...
I believe Daniel Madrigal was the one who was so loquacious and just great. He was the one who was our front man, so to speak.
Oh, well, maybe we can track him down.
It'd be amazing to hear what they think after all this time, you know, and like all, I mean, they're all, they're all working people now out of college, you know, doing their own lives. It'd be interesting to hear what the effect is on them. I wish I did stay in touch, but you know, life intervenes with stuff. So, and they were kids. Why are they going to stay in touch with me?
Right. I guess they would be older than me now. That's weird to think about.
Seven. That's really hilarious. And I could be their grandmother. Weird. Yeah, Michael did some amazing work. He just did some amazing work. How's the show coming? Is it pulling together well?
Really well. Yeah. I mean, our step right now, we've, you know, there's about 20 or so of his works in the show. We're at the moment where we're kind of figuring out like display strategies, like what's in the room. So with this project, because there were these photo panels that LACMA produced that showed the gallery before and after, there's two sets of those photos for both student reinstallations. So we can actually show those photos and then potentially like a binder. I mean, there's so much documentation. LACMA just sent us their archive digitally, and there's beautiful photos of the students hanging the paintings and kind of like more casual. There's actually great sets of photos of the architectural model that they made of the show that you did with them, where it looks like it's on a rooftop and maybe Michael or someone took snapshots of the scale model. So there's a lot of support material around the making of the show, the checklist. So I think we want to find a way to present as much of that as possible in this case.
I'm so happy to hear that. Because I know that LACMA was, one of Michael's stipulations was that there be an archive, of course, because he's all about the archive, but there be some kind of visual archive, either video or, you know, still images or something. So I'm glad to hear that there is, that lives on.
It's extensive. And then there's really, because it was such a public work, like Stella was saying, there's interesting engagements with the public. There's like a radio program where it's discussed. Of course, there's press, but LACMA is such a major public site that the way it touches the public is pretty well archived in LACMA's files, which we're also super interested in. These projects that are less kind of only embedded within a knowing art world that knows his practices, this, of course, is much more public, multifarious how people would read it. So
that is absolutely true. I think that's, you know, in thinking back, you know, you're reminding me all these things. That's why it was important to him to work with students that weren't necessarily art students, too. I mean, whoever was interested, he was welcoming in, you know, like, so I think he wanted to expand the audience in order to, you know, like, get people interested in art. He's such a promoter of, you know, critical thinking and art making. And so that makes sense. That I'm so glad that all that information is still around, because I have this little folder that, you know, one handwritten note and then my little letters. So it's nice that there's a lot going on.
Yeah. I mean, someone could make a book about this project just with the documentation. I mean, easily. It's so rich. So I think hopefully maybe our presentation is like a step toward revealing all these touch points and kind of archival nodes that sort of like constitute its afterlife.
And then there's also all the documents that kind of outline his structure, the way he was, you know, delineating it, like the memo he gave to the students and the, like, with the schedule and the sort of, and like the questionnaire.
I love that questionnaire.
I can send you a scan of it.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that. Thank you. That'd be great.
Is there anything else you want to tell us about the project?
I don't think so. I think we covered at least everything I could remember.
Yeah, Mara, thank you so much for kind of so thoroughly going back through this. It's really inspiring.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for asking. I'm excited that this project is continuing. You know, and as you said, it was important to Michael. And it's so meaningful and touching to me that it affected his practice going forward. I did not know that, and I think that's just fantastic. So it accomplished that. It's like this super extra thing that it accomplished. That's very cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, it definitely feels like it pushed a new frontier for him or something. Like it opened something that wasn't there before.
Yeah, he also said that he hoped it would inspire future experiments with these like new educational models. So I don't know, it's just interesting to revisit it to see if maybe it does.
Yeah, and Stella, that's striking because, yeah, there's a quote we were thinking to maybe use as sort of part of our intro text. And it talks about that he sees all his work as these models, you know, and like understanding them as models for aesthetic production or, you know, sociological production or something. So to think of that this as a model, yeah, is really, really interesting. It's a really dynamic one. Yeah.
It's very cool. Well, so nice to meet you both. And thank you for doing this project. I'm very excited about it.
Bye.
Bye.